The Hugo Panel with Puppygate. This panel was recorded at SweCon 2015, Confuse in Linköping, Sweden. The participants are Jocke Halme, Kjartan Lindö, Flemming Rasch, Tommy Persson, and it is moderated by Mariana Likoma. SweCon-poddar, en poddradio från svenska science fiction och fantasy-kongresser.
Hello and good evening and welcome to our discussion of all things Hugos and certain puppies. My name is Mariana Leikoma, or Kisu Leikoma, as it says on my badge, and I will be the moderator here. And I would first like our esteemed panelists to, well, describe themselves in a few words, or the age-old question, why are you here in this panel?
Okay. I'm 47 years old man from Finland. Describe how.
Whatever. Yeah. Why are you here?
Oh yes, yes. I'm looking for a company. No. I'm here because I like SweCons, so I come here. But why I'm on this panel? I usually participate in this kind of paneling because I tend to read most of these nominees. Year after year, searching for something decent, often failing, but not as spectacular as this year. So, I am an expert, and my name is Jocke Halme.
My name is Kjartan Lindö. I'm Norwegian. I'm not quite as old as this guy or these guys, but I have read the Hugo nominated novels the last 10 or 15 years or something. So what I'm no expert, I'm an enthusiast. I also try to read the nominees for a couple of other awards as well. And, sometimes they are interesting and sometimes there are very good stories in the nominations. Sometimes, however, not so much. It will be interesting to see if I agree with the others.
And my name is Flemming, and I'm from Denmark. I'm a science fiction fan, and I read not as much as I would want to science fiction novels, and I like really much to discuss those novels, so that's probably why I'm here.
Yeah, my name is Tommy Persson. I'm from Sweden, the only Swede here. Yeah, but I actually, I have a habit of going to the WordCon, so I read the novels, and I have been in these kind of panels since we started to have them in Sweden and since we started to have them in Finland. So I'm here because I was in the panel at Archipelagon, and I'm usually at this panel.
So looks like we actually have a fairly multicultural panel here. Good, yes. Representation.
Middle-aged white men.
Yes. Exactly. Yes, exactly. And I'm obviously the token female, and that's why I'm on this panel. But yeah, as Jocke already kind of mentioned, usually the Hugos have offered kind of nice and interesting and good new things to read, and this year might have, in many cases, been an exception because of two very vocal groups of activists, the sad and rabid puppies. And before we get into what actually made it on the ballot, and we'll only be talking about the novels because we only got an hour, I would like my panelists to explain the whole Puppygate briefly-ish. What happened, why, and what were the results? Jocke, if you would do the honors.
Okay, so I have how much? 20 minutes? Yeah. This started 3 years ago. And then there were a few people who so-called got fed up with this left-wing, liberal, boring, whiny, whinging stuff that has been filling these list, nominee lists, for quite a while. No proper, decent American man was winning any of these awards, so something had to be done. No fun space opera kind of stuff where your exceptional American virtue of a man wins the evil Emperor Ming or the horrible monsters, gets the gloriously beautiful princess for himself, and gets the planet for reward, or any or something like that in fantasy otherwise, but you don't read fantasy because that's, you know, for those liberals. And they started making noises, and at first they weren't really that impressive. But the next year, that was last year, they got some of their nominees on the lists, and people paid attention that, okay, yes, well, you really like these things, don't you? They're not very good still, but okay, we'll play along, and well, you're not winning, obviously. And this year, they really upped their game. They offered slates. They offered
there was a list. Slate last year also.
Yes, but it was not that efficiently done. Mm-hmm. This time they really gave orders that now there is this list where you have these nominees for the novels, these nominees for the novelettes, these for the various other categories, and vote the slate. They may have not said that out loud too many places, but the places where people of this ilk visit, they got the message, and they voted, or they nominated. And the nominating process is one of the weak points with Hugo's. It's a certain period of time that you have to nominate stuff, and if you consider that there's only so much you can read every year, it's a possibility that a number of really great stories and novels are left out from the actual final nominees that we have here to discuss about in various years. And this time, it happened that they had a certain sufficient amount of people that nominated, and it was almost completely taken over by these puppies. And there was not only just one group of puppies, the sad puppies, for whom this was the third year. There was also the rapid puppies, or the rabid puppies, led by this fellow by the name of VD, Theodore Beale, who is even more
extreme.
Let's call him a bit more extreme than most other people. And they completely ransacked the place, and the lists were somewhat surprising. After this, these nominees were put out for everyone to see. There was a hell of a ruckus from all over the place. The puppies were really happy. They said, job well done. The non-puppies were somewhat disappointed and vocal. And soon, some of the nominees who got on the final lists, being on the puppy slates, decided to act and say, well, I mean, I don't really like my name to be associated with these guys, so please take my name off. And there were at least a novel and a couple of shorter stories that were taken out from the list. And some they were also taken because of irregularities with the rules. So now we are at this point, and apparently we need to talk about these books. The interesting thing will happen at the Worldcon when the results are given, because a large number of people have been advocating that people should vote no award as the first place, since the list is almost completely tainted by the puppies. So as a show of really adult response, we should refuse them the victory and give it to nobody. And that's where we stand at the moment.
And if that happens, they have threatened to destroy the prize by voting it. But you can say one thing. The Hugo Prize has been described as the best book this year, and a lot of people have got hung up on that, because it's really voted for the members of the WordCon. And it is, of course, that you say the best book, but it's, of course, it's not the best book for everybody. But since people have thought it is the best book for everybody, people feel, you know, left out when their books are not heard. That's why they have a lot of support on forum and stuff, when people say my kind of books are not talked about in this context. It is like the Oscar, that it's not the best film, it's the best film voted for the members of the Movie Academy or whatever.
And of course, we don't know the winner this year yet, but we do know that a record number of people have voted in the Hugos this year, which will make it very, very interesting. Now, as for the novel category, 5 novels there, 3 of which were actually not on the puppy slate, one of which, although got there because one of the puppy-nominated stuff withdrew. But I personally, before we start talking about these, I personally think novel-wise, and not talking about the shorter fiction category, novel-wise, this wasn't an entirely bad year. Puppies or no puppies, there were some pretty darn good books here. If I briefly read the list of all the nominees, and then we start talking about them individually. The final ballot consists of Ancillary Sword by Anne Leckie, The Dark Between the Stars by Kevin J. Anderson, The Goblin Emperor by Catherine Addison, Skin Game by Jim Butcher, and The Three-Body Problem by Xixing Liu, translated by Ken Liu. And, yeah, could we start... Let's talk a little bit first about The Ancillary Sword, which is, of course, the second book of the series, and the first book won everything last year. If we could start from the middle there... If you'll go first. Yeah.
Should I start?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I happen to be one of the few people who was a bit bored by Ancillary Sword. It's a second book in a trilogy, and I think not much happened. It's mostly a build-up for the third book. I think it's very well written, and... I think maybe also, that's just my opinion, that the characters are a bit dull. I think compared to the first one, I think there was a lot of really good ideas, but I don't think there was much added in this one, in this book. So that's one of my, not my favorite.
Okay. See, we shouldn't mention the first one, but can I just plug our panel 10 o'clock tomorrow morning when we are going to discuss Ancillary Justice. Yeah. But I can say that I think that maybe the second book was structurally better than the first book. So I liked it, but I didn't vote for it as a winner because it was second part of the series.
I'm pretty much in agreement. I think it was... not a very, very good book. It was okay. It was better structure, somewhat better execution, but there were not as many good, new, fresh ideas as there was in Justice. It was sort of hard to take as a standalone novel because of it builds so heavily upon the Justice book, and that ruined the experience, and if I hadn't read The Justice, I probably wouldn't enjoy this book very much at all. However, I did think that it did contribute some more on the post-colonialism and some of the non-genderized ideas from Justice, and it was a good read, and I'm really glad I had read the Justice, the first book in the series, before, because I'm not sure that it could really stand alone.
I don't think what more can I add to that, except that I was entertained, just as I was entertained with Ancillary Justice, even though that book, the great idea that there is no gender for the people is somewhat stomachifying, that, oh, that's really interesting. Well, we don't have that in Finland. So... cool idea, really.
Okay, now I don't have to go to that panel tomorrow.
stunning. Yeah. Sorry, gender pronouns. We have genders in Finland. Yeah. At least 16, I think. That was Casey's. Okay. But yeah, it's a good book.
So ancillary sword, some neat ideas maybe, but not quite as fresh as the first one. Seems like our other panelists are more or less in agreement here.
It's a difficult second album.
It is the difficult second album.
Should somebody tell what it is about, no?
Well, sure, go ahead.
No. Yeah, go, tell us.
Yes.
What happens in the book?
Spoil it.
Well, they get to a planet, and there are some problem with the colonization. Yes. But there is a continuation of Ancillary Justice, and it is still the thing with personhood, what is a person, because they have another problem now with another character that is maybe infiltrated by an AI or not, and you have the discussion about what is a person, and then you have the discussion on the planet about subhumans and, higher standing humans and stuff, so everything is kind of who should we care about, who is a person and stuff like that.
Well, how about the next one then? Would anybody like to explain what Kevin J. Anderson's The Dark Between the Stars is all about? Could somebody please explain what it's all about?
It's a sequel to a 7-book series.
A better question is, did anybody actually complete the novel? Because I know I didn't. I only got halfway through and then I gave up in disgust.
Yeah, has any of you finished the book? No.
No. I can say I listened to this very good podcast, Cool Street Podcast, by Jonathan Strahan and Gary Kowolf, and they had a special edition when they talk about the books, and they had tried to read this book, but when 3 people try to read this book, and in the podcast tell me very good, in a good way, they told me how bad it was, how bad the language was, that nothing happened, and it was just so boring and they couldn't finish the book, then I was not, I didn't think I should read it. But it's also fun because the puppies has complained about, we don't get the traditional essay, where space and something happens. And then they nominate this Kevin Anderson book, where people claim nothing happens. So it's a bit, it's a contradiction here. So have they nominated, just for the authors and not read the book? Or yeah.
But also, I can explain why I didn't bother finishing it, because it was too long, too shoddy, too blunt, too unrefined. Yes. And there are great ideas in it. There are lots of great elements. However, everything is written out in so many words. There's no subtleties in it. There's no hint. He says word for word what will happen in the next 5 pages. In the start of each chapter, you know exactly what will happen. You don't have to imagine anything because he tells you by the letter. And the book was 600 pages or something, and I managed 300, and then I just was disgusted with myself for not giving up sooner.
You're a better person, reader, more patient reader than the rest of us combined. I made it to page 52 out of 771, and then I gave up because life's too short. But yeah, as Jukka said, it's basically a sequel to a sequel, or sequel to a series at least, if
of
not
7 books.
Of 7 books. And maybe you probably get more out of it if you've read them all, but as a standalone book, it's, yeah, as was mentioned, it's not very well written. I think part of what the puppies said, that they want to introduce new and good fiction to people, and unfortunately this, along with everything else that got on the ballot from their slate, is not it. Let's move on to something. Yes.
Could I say a bit more about it? I think it's not terribly bad written. I actually read a little more than 100 pages, and I think there was some. I have a vague idea about what the book will be about. You get introduced to a lot of character, and told a lot about what I think is what happened in the seven previous volumes. But I think maybe this one, maybe this is for new readers. So I think if I were 20 or 30 years younger, I may have wanted to read it all, and I may have liked it. But I don't think it's, I don't think it's a good novel, so as far as I managed to read it.
It's written to a certain kind of audience, and I, just like Fleming, 20 years ago, I might have been in an audience for that book if I would have just kept on reading the amounts of books that I read at the time, 30 years ago, but not anymore. Now I really don't want to read mediocre or worse books anymore.
But you know, Yuka Sergeyevich, whatever, he read all of them.
Jam Master Jay Sare.
He read it and he didn't like it either. So, but, and he's younger, or youngish.
Yes.
He's
not that young.
He's crazy.
He's younger than we are. So it's always good to talk about a person who's not even in the country right now. So, but yeah, let's just, I think we all agree that The Dark Between the Stars was probably not our first nominee, first choice for this category. How about then? There was Catherine Addison's The Goblin Emperor, which is far different from the previous two, being, for example, fantasy. Would anybody like to briefly explain what The Goblin Emperor is about? Somebody who... Has anybody read this one? Jukka, would you like to tell?
Not really.
Okay,
no.
So...
Well, I've read it, and it's a fantasy story. The title gives it away, Goblin Emperor. It's about this guy who somehow winds up becoming the emperor because the real emperor or the old emperor dies in an accident or something. And this is really surprising because he was a bastard child and he was a goblin, and this is an elfish kingdom. And what really made this an interesting read for me wasn't the fact of the goblin elf thing, and it wasn't it was the characters and how human they all seemed while they obviously weren't. And Catherine Addison managed to convey a lot of human emotions into her characters, and it was pretty compassionate. It was a really interesting read because it was so down to earth and so well. I mean,
Sorry.
Well, I will say that it was extremely well written and very extremely readable. It was probably the best written book on the Nobel nomination. And Catherine Addison is, what's her name?
Saramonet,
yes.
Yes, yes, I agree. The characters were excellent. Also, the minor characters and the villains were also. You don't get to know who the villains are before you get into the book, and but I think you understand the villains, why they did what they did, and especially the main character is really. Well, a nice person. It's not like those Grimjack characters that you see in fantasy nowadays.
I like the movie adaptation of the book really pretty much. It's King Ralph. It's more or less the same story. Sufficiently plenty many people on before the king-to-be are killed or died, and then suddenly the person who should not be in this case, the pariah, who gets some royal treatment at the beginning of the book, gets to be the king, and he has to show that he's worthy of the emperor, worthy of the crown, or the title, and... It's a tortured hero that faces adversities and triumphs over them, and it's a love story.
But it's not
not
as,
really.
But it's not as comedic as King Ralph tried to be.
Yeah, it's as funny as King Ralph.
I have to admit that I actually quite liked it. I like the whole idea of, even though it was fantasy, it was not this let's save the world fantasy. It was much more, you know, down to earth, so to speak, and all this court intrigue. I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. And it was kind of, you know, one of those books that after I finished reading it, I just felt good and I felt happy and, you know, sort of not the feeling not unlike of, say, hugging a very nice and happy little puppy. But yeah, I liked it. I thought it was kind of nice to read something nice for a change. And, you know,
I also think the world building worked fine. You believed in this world with the elves and the goblins.
Yeah. With the confines of it being a fantasy story.
Yeah. But it is also, what I really liked about it is that it actually works very well as a standalone novel, unlike the previous two. And unlike the next one, we have Skin Game by Jim Butcher. This is, of course, the 15th of the Harry Dresden books. Did anybody read this one all the way through? This was one of these late books.
There should be a law against the part 15 in the series or something. It should be allowed.
Especially to be nominated for any award. I like Jim Butcher's first Dresden novels. I read three or four of them. They're entertaining fluff. And the pages I read this one, it looked like it's the same old, same old. But there's no time in the world for me to read this novel. It's, what, 23,000 pages long?
Only about 600.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad, no.
No. I haven't read anything by Butcher before, and I kind of knew I would experience a lot of moments because I didn't know the characters and I didn't know the settings in it. But it worked fine. It wasn't a standalone novel, but once you knew that, and you could get by. It's sort of similar to if you compare literature to the food industry. Then this was a McDonald's. You know what you're going to get. You go there and you buy it, and it's good, tasty, greasy, yucky meal. You eat it, and then you forget about it. And a couple of weeks later, you find you crave another one. Somehow, you're not really sure why, but you do. So I can easily understand why people read all the 14, 15 novels in the series, because I mean it's quite entertaining, and the guy gets beat up in creative ways. That's always fun to read, but as a Hugo nominated novel, I didn't quite see it.
Oh, I read the first one some years ago and found it very funny, but not something that I would want to read up till the last volume of. I think this one, there was a lot of stuff that I thought, well, this might work if you have read the previous 16 novels, but it was like the characters doing things that I could not comprehend. Why does this character do this? Is this just badly written, or is it because of something that I don't know because I haven't read the previous 16 volumes? So I didn't manage to read more than, less than 100 pages.
I actually read it, and I've read the previous 14, and I've read the graphic novels, and I probably would have read this one even if it hadn't been on the slate. Was this the best of the series? Hell no. Was this a Hugo-worthy novel? No, not at all. It was entertaining. I think the McDonald's comparison was fairly apt. I knew what I was getting into when I started reading it. I'll probably read the rest of them, because why not? There was one really, really nice scene in the book fairly later on in the book, and I'm going to horribly spoil it now for everybody. The basic point is that Harry Dresden and his, cohorts have to steal something from the vault of Hades himself, and at the end of the book, Dresden actually gets to meet Hades, because of course he does. And Harry Dresden and Hades have this really, really cute discussion where they talk about the things they have in common, A thing they have in common is that they both really love their dogs. Hades loves his three-headed dog, who's very, very cute in the book. And Harry Dresden has this huge mouse-named dog, who's also very, very cute. And they have this really, really nice, you know, man-to-man discussion about, you know, how good it is to own nice dogs. And I thought that was kind of sweet. But is this enough to give it a Hugo? No.
I disagree.
Are you now regretting your voting choices?
A bit, yes. Okay.
But yeah, Skin Game, part 15 in a series, it does really, really doesn't work very well as a standalone book, even though it's got cute moments. And then the final nominee is The Three-Body Problem by Xixing Liu, translated by Ken Liu. And this is, of course, the first time that a translated novel has made it onto the Hugo slate, which is historical in itself, in a very, very good way. Could anybody like to explain what this book was about?
Without spoiling?
Without spoiling, please.
Good luck.
That's a bit hard. Yeah.
Not really, no. Okay. Can you tell something?
Well, it's one of those things where it's very difficult to explain what it is about. But maybe we should say something about it. It deals heavily with fairly strong science fictional ideas and also Chinese cultural revolution, which are both... both can be alien concepts, perhaps, to Western readers.
Oh. Yeah, I think the passages on the Cultural Revolution and its consequences were pretty well written. And I haven't read a lot about that in nonfiction stuff, but it was really it was good writing and. Probably really hard to translate a lot of it. And Ken Liu did a wonderful job of actually conveying a lot of the things that I do believe was in the original text. So if there's ever an award for best translation, this could probably be among the contenders because it does convey a lot of layers that I didn't think... would be easy to convey from such a pictographic language as Chinese to English, but it was pretty well done. But the science fiction-ish ideas is really hard to explain without spoiling, but some of it felt so strange that I'm not sure that I really understood them. Some of it was quite easy to grasp, but the balance between what I understand and what I think I may have understood and what I know I didn't understand made it... it was a challenging read, but it was really interesting. You had to work your way through it and in new ways, not just... it wasn't just something you read for 5 minutes on the subway. You had to sit down and really read it, and that was a quite interesting experience.
No,
absolutely not. This was fine cuisine, but whether you like the taste or not, that's not necessarily the chef's fault.
Yeah. Okay. So I like the book, and it is the most science fictional one here, and I think I actually voted for it as a winner. But there was some... It felt old-fashioned. It might be that the author is inspired by Arthur C. Clarke and similar authors. And some scenes seem very strange. And the thing when reading is here, I don't know if the scenes were strange or if they were an artifact of the translation. I assumed it was an artifact of the translation and voted for it. But if I had thought that it was written in English as the first language, I would not have voted for it because there was some strange structural thing and some things that didn't mesh totally. So,
yes, it's a very strange and maybe a hard read for some readers. I try not to spoil, but it is the three-body problem is a physical mathematical problem about bodies moving in space, like planets moving. And I really like hard science fiction, and it is, in this book, you get to know a lot about this three-body problem, and there is a game in the book. There's a game called the, I think it's called the three-body problem, and in this game, they have uses this mathematical problem, the three-body problem, and show, and I think it's very, very innovative, and I think it's that's why I voted for this one as a winner. And I think it's the core of science fiction that you can take an idea and make a lot of it, and I think he made really a lot of it, and he managed to intervene some of the history of science into this game also with this three-body problem. I think that was very, very good. And maybe the Chinese history and Cultural Revolution, maybe there was something that I've just found it very strange, but I don't know if it was because it was badly written or anything. I didn't find it badly written. I just found it very strange.
Okay. I can confess that I also put this one first, even though I don't think that I liked it the most. Exactly. My problem was with the hard science fiction thing, which is not my cup of tea. And I was frustrated at times for some of the denseness of the writing. I love a lot of the ideas and the sheer fact that it's a Chinese science fiction novel, and I think it was written in the 90s or something. It's not fresh out of yesterday or something. 2008, so it's so 90s almost. Yeah.
It was a bestseller in China, I think.
In the 90s? No, yeah. It has interesting stuff in it, and it's really, really good to see that a translated novel gets to be on a ballot, so I'm fully supported because of that. I don't know, I know it's wrong, but then again, there are puppies around, so I don't feel that bad about my choices of voting.
Yeah, I can say that I didn't know how to vote, then Jonas Strand said that he considered the Hugo Prize to actually be a science fiction prize, even if it says science fiction and fantasy, they added. And if it is primarily a science fiction prize, that made me vote for it above the Goblin Emperor.
Well, if it is a science fiction prize.
But I like that idea. I have always liked that idea that it is a science fiction prize. So.
And yeah, well, that's a matter of a totally different debate. Yeah. I have to admit that this wasn't my favorite of the bunch either. The Goblin Emperor was, and I can't remember which one I placed first, because as Jukka said, it did have a lot of merits. Even if it wasn't the best book, it was by no means the worst book, and it was really, really not a bad book at all, even though it had its problems. So before we talk a little bit about how the Puppygate might change the future of the Hugo Award, let's have a quick round. Who do you think will win, Jukka?
Jeff Vandermeer with the Southern Reach trilogy.
No, that's the next question. Who will win out of these nominees?
Oh, Robert Jackson Bennett, The City of Stairs.
Fair enough.
No, I expect the three-body problem to win. It's the favorite of VD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also believe in three-body problem will win, but I wouldn't mind if... It doesn't really matter much to me as long as neither Anderson nor Butcher wins.
It's really hard to predict, but I hope three-body problem wins. But I'm not sure about how strong the Poppy movement is, and... I'm not sure about the Anne Leckie book. I think she has very strong support, so it might win.
I think the Goblin Emperor has a very strong support in blogs and stuff, so it. I wouldn't be surprised if it won, but I don't know.
I also think the three-body problem might win, but yeah, if it wins, I'll be happy. If Goblin Emperor wins, I'll be happy. If Ancillary Sword wins, I'll be happy, which is not always the case. There are years where there are clear non-favorites. I haven't met anybody except Jukka Särkijärvi who's actually read The Dark Between the Stars, and so maybe it probably has its fans elsewhere. But yeah, maybe instead
it's a New York Times bestseller.
Of yeah. course it is. Yeah.
But then again, yes, I buy books that I
yeah. don't read. So, who was left out of the ballot because of puppies or for some other reason? We, of course, at this point can't really know. Jukka, do you have anything in mind that should have been on the ballot, perhaps?
Why, Gisu, thank you for asking. I personally voted or nominated five novels that none of them made it to the ballot. And I may have voted Emmi Taranto for being a bit of Finnish, or did I wrote for Jääskelän? I can't even remember that. What a Finnish novel anyway. And then I did vote, nominated Jeff Vandermeer's Southern Reach trilogy by the name of Area X, because that's the single volume of it. And then Robert Jackson Bennett's City of Stairs, and something else. I can't remember the rest of them. But that, those books.
I'm not sure about the voting rules. Can you vote for one of the novels and the whole trilogy? And what happens if people are voting for both? Do you know that? Anyone know? Okay, I haven't read that many books from last year, but I read the first book in the Area X trilogy, and I think it was an excellent book. I'm not sure I would have voted for that about a three-party problem, but I really liked it.
I went through a list of the things that was valid to nominate, and the one I read, I can really recommend Station 11. I think that should have been on the list, and it's what Joshua Martin thinks should be on the list. Yeah. Mm. And I really liked Hugh Abercrombie's Half a King. That was, you could nominate. I think that could be a list. And I really liked Hugh Walton's My Real Children. So, yeah.
Well, I'm not sure how many books I would want to have on the list. Jeff Vandermeer was mentioned. Yeah, okay, he's pretty good. Station 11, yeah, I'm sure. We will see the numbers of the nominations once the prizes have been dealt out. But I wouldn't be all that surprised if actually John Scalzi is one of the guys who missed out because of the puppies with his Lock-in novel. One of my best reads last year was the Off the Party by Darrell Gregory or something. Grab a pill, get a god, medically induced religion. Pretty cool concept and well executed, but it's hard to say because the margins aren't that big. There are a lot of good books that could easily wind up on the slate without the puppies, so it's really hard to say which got unfairly executed.
And that, of course, as you explained before, is the weakness of the system, because since everybody can nominate everything, it's fairly easy to play the system if a certain group of people nominates all the same. I personally think also Jeff Vandermeer's books should have been on the list because they're great. I think I also nominated Emmi Taranta's Memory of Water, which is great. And I also think Pasi Ilmari Jääskeläinen with his Rabbit Back Literature Society, because that's weird. That's Finnish, and that's weird. Again, it should have been there. I would have liked to see more translated works in the ballot, and would like to see more in the future. But what do you think? Next year, all of these puppies who now nominated can also nominate.
Yeah, they will probably do this whole thing over again next year, because it takes time to change the rules, so that the rules this year will also be the same next year, because there wasn't last year any changes in the rules for nominations. So we will see the same thing. But there are some suggestions going into the forums about how to change the rules this year, so that will be effective from 2017. And there are two proposals. One is to introduce a series or saga award, which could eliminate or not necessitate the series. Standalone novels and series are two different genres and could probably help a little bit. Because most series are the kind of books and literature that the puppies tend to like. And another is to say that you can nominate 5 novels, but their final list will include 10 novels, so it will be harder to dominate the list with a slate. These are interesting proposals, and there are many counter-proposals, and they need to work out something to agree on. But the next year, we will see the same thing all over again, probably even more, because now they're getting a lot of attention. Even a Norwegian conservative newspaper has a double side on the Hugo controversy. So,
I thought the serious proposal was not related to this, because they also want to get rid of some categories.
Perhaps.
I expect there to be a backlash with the slate from the Liberals.
Okay. And on that note, I think what we can do, rules may be changed, there may be a slate, but what we can do, of course, is everybody who is a member of this year's Worldcon, please nominate. Please, this is the thing. A lot of people don't nominate because they feel they haven't read enough. That's okay. You've read one good book, nominate that. So if you are a member of SESQUAN, please do nominate and vote for Helsinki. Thank you very much.
Musiken av Psychedelic Pedestrian från Free Music Archive. Besök gärna vår hemsida på svekonpoddar.se. It might just be interesting to know how the final Hugo votes came down. And on the first place came The Three Body Problem by Cixin Liu. On the second place came The Goblin Emperor by Catherine Addison. On third place came Ancillary Sword by Anne Leckie. Then came No Award. And after No Award came Skin Game by Gene Butcher, and the last of them, The Dark Between the Stars by Kevin J. Anderson.